Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey everybody, how you doing? This is Ryan. Welcome to episode 13 of the Life Autistic Podcast. Today I am featuring a conversation with Samantha Dirk, who is from Alberta, Canada. She's, I think, 30 and just been going through this discovery process of realizing she was autistic about 2 years ago. We had a really cool conversation. I was really happy to have her on, and we talked about a lot of interesting stuff. Tony Atwood and his Asperger's and Girls video, just some of the differences in boys and girls growing up with Asperger's and autism, and how they can present differently, and how a lot of times girls can go undiagnosed longer than boys can for that reason. We talked a little bit about autism acceptance in the community, her experiences growing up, functioning labels, and other issues within the autism community. And how she's living her life and how it's working out for her and everything she's been discovering and learning over the last couple years. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. I really enjoyed talking to her. And this is episode 13, so thank you. So tune in right now. It's my conversation with Samantha Dirk about living the life autistic. Here we go. All right. And there we go. Okay, we're recording. Hello. How you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. Samantha, welcome and thank you for joining me on the Life Autistic Podcast.
Yeah, no problem.
So, I don't know, do you want to tell us, everyone, a little bit about yourself?
Sure, yeah. So, I'm 30. I just sort of started in the past probably 2 years sorting out kind of my life in terms of how like autism plays into it and going through diagnostic process, similar to kind of how you're going through yours now, and just learning a lot about the neurodiverse community and all of the challenges everybody's facing and how different everybody is. So it's been really, really interesting past 2 years.
I think we're probably, it sounds like, on sort of a similar timeline, because I'm, just about a year and a half ago, I started really kind of digging into this stuff and going, what the hell's going on with my brain? Let me try to figure this out, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, it was really triggered by like issues in my relationship that just seemed to be a lot of problems, and then work problems and all this stuff, and I just kind of went, okay, I just have to really get to the bottom of this. What were the things for you that led you down that path of discovery? Like, I know for me, it was like a few articles I read here and there where like 15 years ago, I read this article written by somebody with Asperger's, and I just went, my jaw dropped, and I just went, I could have written that. Like, this is insane, you know, but it took me another 15 years to like really get into it.
Yeah. I'm kind of similar, but for me, like my sister, who's probably one of the closer people to me, who like knows me the best, she was like,
yeah,
I think you might have Asperger's, like you might be autistic, but that was like, that would have been like 10 years ago. And wow. So I read into like what the traits were like, and I was like, you know, that doesn't really sound like me.
Yeah.
But then about 2 years ago, I looked into it from the women's side,
yes,
like from specifically women's traits. And I was like, that's my life.
Yeah.
Literally me. Like, I watched a video. Now I can't remember his name. I have it on my phone. There's a psychologist, and he specifically works with, like, he's a specialist in autism. And Dr. Tony Atwood.
Tony Atwood. Yeah,
yeah. He wrote some books, but he has a video also on YouTube that's specifically, it's like a lecture, but he's specifically talking about Asperger's in girls. And
okay,
it was like listening to him talk about my life pretty much. So
yeah,
that was super interesting,
yeah,
for me.
And that's one of the things I think we were talking a bit back and forth on a messaging about this. And that's one of the, I'm only about maybe 12 or so episodes into this podcast, and you're the first woman that I've talked to. And,
yes,
and it's interesting. Like, some of the things I've read, like I read a book, I think it was called Aspergirls, and just
on my read list.
Yeah. And like some of the articles I've read and things, just seeing like how the traits can present differently in women. And I was just looking at something this morning that was talking about women with Asperger's tend to go undiagnosed longer than men do, because the traits can like, for whatever reason, women can, they can like mask better, or their traits stay hidden longer, or they just kind of manifest in different ways that aren't maybe as noticed. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts towards that, like in the research you've done or your own experience?
I think a lot of it has to do with, like, I mean, when, like, the man who, I guess, came up with the term Asperger's syndrome, he was studying boys, and all
okay
of the study of autism was always in male subjects. It was always in boys, always in men.
Yeah.
And they didn't even really look into women because, I mean, at the time, if you were just looking at the surface, like, boys with more severe traits, they would be the ones that you would recognize immediately. So they're like, well, these are the boys we need to be studying.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't be looking into girls at the same time. So a lot of information about girls wasn't really coming out until like the 90s and the 2000s. So it's very, very new on the women's side of things.
Yeah.
So it's not surprising that women aren't being diagnosed as quickly, because a lot of our traits, like a lot of it does have to do with masking and just sort of trying to blend in at more of a higher degree.
Yeah.
I did read some very interesting articles, and one of them was talking about how women with autism have very similar to the same amount of brain activity when they're socializing as a neurotypical male does. So they're still not like quite as socially active when like in their brain activity as a neurotypical female.
Okay.
But they're very similar to a neurotypical male. So it makes sense that a lot of women go undiagnosed.
Yeah. That's interesting. Now, do you have, like, looking back, this is a question I always like to talk with people about, is people that are, you know, come to this later in life. Like, when you look back on your childhood and your teenage years, like, What experiences do you see there that, you know, kind of are maybe unique to being autistic, or things that you look back on and go, oh, I know for me, like I look back on things and I just like certain things just make so much more sense now. Can you talk a bit about that? Like your childhood experience or your teenage years or.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was very fortunate. Like I didn't go through any bullying or anything like that. Very fortunate. But now knowing what I know about myself, looking back, in that Tony Atwood, in that, video, he talks about how women present their special interests differently. Okay. So it's like, I think he says something about like, girls really want to fit in, so they look at what the other girls are doing, yeah. and they bring that on as a special interest. So it's like, well, if she really likes Barbies, I'm gonna have 100 Barbies.
Yeah.
And for me, I would do little things like that. So okay. I remember it was like in the 90s when the little like butterfly clips were in, and someone would wear like little butterfly clips, yeah. just like two up here, and I'd wear like 12.
Okay. Yeah.
And everyone would be like, why do you wear your hair like that? And it's like, well, they're cool, so yeah. don't you like me more because of it? And it was yeah. like, it didn't click. And at the time, I didn't realize that was not like, I missed the mark.
Yeah. Well, hey, yeah. If 2 is cool, then 12 is really cool.
Exactly. It's 6 times as cool, but yeah. it didn't work that way. And then, yeah, once you get... That was kind of when I was quite young, and then getting older into my teenage years, I realized my efforts aren't working, screw this, and I went on a whole, like, opposite, like, not even trying to fit in, like, just do okay. my own thing, and that's another thing that apparently a lot of girls go through. They go through a phase of, like, dressing really different, yeah. chopping all their hair off, like, that's super yeah. common, apparently, so huh. did that as well.
That's interesting, yeah. I have this weird thing... And I want to look into this more, but there's like, I've read a little bit about, there's like a small subset of autistic males who actually tend to have more of the traits that are common in autistic females. And okay. like some of the stuff I've read about that, I've just kind of been like, huh, like, cause it's weird. Like I sort of feel like in some ways for me, that was made a lot of sense when I was like a child, like some of the stuff you're talking about, I'm just like, it sounds very similar. And I remember even being a kid, I used to like, or when I was a teenager, like I used to be really like I'd have a lot of female friends too, you know, like I'd be happy sometimes hanging out with like 10 girls and me, and it'd be totally normal. It'd just be like, I don't know, just for whatever reason. But anyway, that's something I want to look more into. I've just kind of been reading a little bit about that, this small subset. So your teenage years, you got weird. You started yeah. being more unique and...
Yeah. And then I just sort of leveled out. I don't know. I yeah. got it out of my system and... Yeah.
Yeah.
Hard to say now. Like now I would say... I don't really... Like I feel like I would be like masking at work. I work with a lot of people, and okay. Being social is part of my job, which does not come naturally to me, so I kind of have to make it up as I go. So now I think a lot of the problems I face are just social exhaustion,
yeah,
being very tired from masking all day, and that's really like I don't really feel like I'm altering my personality that much, but I'm just like I'm amplifying it yeah. in a way I wouldn't naturally want to.
Yeah. This is the part. This is the part where I say, "Well, you don't seem autistic. You seem very yeah. social. You seem to be. I don't see anything there. You know."
Yeah, that's the half of the conversations I like to have with people throughout
yeah.
the day.
Yeah, exactly.
It's actually super interesting right now. With so I'm a hairstylist. So every day I wear the face mask, and my yeah. client wears a face mask. Okay. And everybody's complaining, like, "Well, I have such a hard time." They're telling me that it's such a hard time. Reading facial expressions. And I was like, well, you know, I was like, I have Asperger's, I have autism, and that's like every day of my life. So this yeah. is actually, it's such a good opportunity for people who don't understand what that's like
yeah.
to kind of, they're literally experiencing not being able to read those facial cues, which I've never been good at. If you're not laughing or crying, I don't know, there's nothing in between.
Yeah.
You just look bored. So it's really interesting. A lot of people are like, man, I can't. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's really weird, though.
Huh. That's really interesting. I hadn't really thought about that, but yeah, that's true. It's like, welcome to our world. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Where there is no, yeah, where we just can't read it. And yeah, I feel the same way. Like, I was talking to my psychotherapist about this the other day, and we were talking about that, and he was asking me, like, how I am with, like, facial expressions and stuff. And it's like you just said, I'm like, it's like, on a scale of 1 to 10, if it's like a 7 or 8 and up, then I can read it. If it's like blatantly clear, crying or angry, then I can read it. But from like a 7 down, I don't see it. It's like, you know, or I'll be talking to people and like their facial expression will change and I have to stop the conversation and be like, hang on a second, your face just changed. Does that mean anything? Like, is there something there that I need to know about? Because I saw that it changed, but I don't know what it meant. So can you explain that? And you get some weird looks.
I feel like that's pretty fair. I also feel like because I'm not really good at picking up on other people's facial expressions, I'm not very good at expressing with my face. Like, I don't really know, like, I've got the, you know, the resting bitch face or whatever, but that's just like, I don't know what to do with my face.
Yeah.
Like, it's not instinctual for me to like make facial expressions unless it is like smiling, right?
Which, yeah.
It only makes sense to me to smile at things that are funny or
yeah,
that I'm happy about. So I walk around like deadpan all day.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had that too. People are like, what's wrong? And I'm like, nothing. What do you mean? Oh, you look like you're upset or angry or bored. And I'm like, no, I'm just not doing anything with my face right now, I guess. I don't know. How did you get into like hairstyling? Because I feel like that's a really social thing. You got to be talking to people. And like, I'm a bartender and you know, it's like the same thing. Like I sometimes wonder how I ended up there, but in a lot of ways it's actually been good for me because it's like, it sort of forces me to socialize. It's, I have sort of like scripts that I run. So I talk to a lot of people, but it's the same conversation over and over again. So I'm comfortable with it. Oh, I think we froze for a second there.
Yeah, I'm the exact same. Like, oh, did we?
Yeah.
Are we good?
Yeah, we're good.
All right. Yeah, and like, I'm the exact same. Like, I will pick a story or a topic of conversation, and I will run that for like a month until my client starts circling back and I'm starting to see them again. So, I do that for sure. But yeah, hairstyling is not something I was like, I'm going to be a hairstylist. I sort of fell into it. Like, I needed a job that paid better than minimum wage, so I was like,
yeah,
do something else. But I was just so used to working, like, I worked retail and waitressing and like tons of social jobs, and I just thought everybody went home after work exhausted and couldn't do anything. I was like, this is just normal life for people. But it's not. I'm not going to continue being a hairstylist. I'm actually starting some courses to finish my bachelor's degree to get more into like, you know, research or something that's more in my social wheelhouse, that's not going to be so draining on me on a day-to-day.
Yeah, that draining part is something like, because I'll usually work, you know, I bartend and I'll usually work Thursday, Friday, Saturday night. And then by the end of Saturday night, it's like my brain is just fried. Like, it's in a frying pan, it's sizzling. I'm just trying to finish my night of work and I'm just hearing the sizzle in my head and my brain just going zzz. And then it's like I come home and like usually Sunday, it's like the whole day could be a complete write-off, because it's just like there's just nothing left in the battery. It's got to recharge, and the only way it can do that is stillness and silence. And that's, you know, it's tricky. I found, like, for me, like, certain diet and exercise changes have helped a lot with my recovery time, but it's still there. And yeah, I used to think the same thing. I'd just be like, doesn't everybody go home and just collapse for an entire day or two after doing stuff? But
yeah, like, isn't that normal?
Isn't that normal? But then you find out, no, it isn't.
Oh no, people can continue to do things after work. That's amazing.
Yeah.
For me, like right before COVID started, I actually changed my work schedule, so I only work 4 days a week. I'm still only working 4 days a week because it works so well for me.
Yeah.
It lets me balance my life so much better. but I was working like 10-hour days, and like for me, working a 10-hour day, it may as well be working a 4-hour day. Like it's the exact same. Like once I'm there, I'm expelling the energy, but then I go home and I just like pass out. It doesn't matter if it's, like I said, it doesn't matter if it's 4 hours or 10 hours. That is a work day. All of my energy goes into that, and then I'm done. So
yeah. That's so familiar, because I feel the same. It's like I could do, 4 or 5 hour shift. I could do a 10, 12-hour shift. It's like, that's just a work day, so everything, and I don't usually start till the afternoon, so even on work days sometimes, it's like, I don't really get much done during the day before work, because all my energy is being, I'm sort of like saving it and storing it up and like building up that energy so that I can go to work, use the energy there, and it's like, yeah. And I find, like, do you find this too? Like, I'm better with working less days, even if it's longer hours. Like, I'd rather work 4 10-hour days than 5 8-hour days, because it just takes up, like you said, it takes up the whole day. Like, even if it's working a few hours, it just, nothing else is happening that day other than work, really.
Yeah, I'd be perfectly content working like 12-hour days, getting 36 hours, and then just being done for the other 4 days of the week.
Yeah, I would too. I feel like I'd be so much happier if I could do that. You know, just work the 3 days and then have 4 days of freedom, one recovery day, and then 3 days to like just, you know, do what I want. So back to, like you said, like it was your sister that first said to you, hey, I think you might have Asperger's or autism, or
her exact words were, I knew you were autistic before you did.
Okay. Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, okay, sure. And yeah, I mean, it's not like something that I was like offended by or anything. I was just like, sure, all right, I'll look more into that. And it did, like, it really helped, especially with dealing like problems with depression and everything, actually learning that it was like when all of your energy is going into socializing and it's not really getting you anywhere and you start to get depressed from it, like finding sort of like the source of that is very helpful.
Yeah.
like you don't have to be as hard on yourself almost. My sister just knows, she knows me better than anybody, so she was like, I think you might like want to look into this, and that was definitely worth it. So
yeah. And what age were you when you started looking into it? You said, oh, I guess a couple years ago, you said.
So I'd be like 28-ish, 29-ish, I don't know.
And then, so where did you go for information? Like, was it books? Was it YouTube videos? Was it articles online?
I started, you know, just quick Google search, watch some, like I said, that YouTube video helped a ton.
Yeah.
But as soon as I specifically looked into autism in women, that was like kind of the deciding factor. I did actually, so I do see a psychiatrist from now and then, and like we did talk about it, and he was like you've got tons of the traits, like we could definitely do a full assessment if you wanted to. And I was just like, I don't need to, like it's not necessary for me right now, like I don't see the benefit in having an official like on paper diagnosis when he can just say you've got more than enough traits. But if you looked into like cognitive behavioral therapy focused towards autism, you'd probably start seeing some more improvements, and that's been super helpful. So
Is that what you've been doing, the cognitive behavioral therapy? With that psychiatrist? Or I said with that psychiatrist, or
So I don't do the therapy with him. I have a cognitive behavioral therapy book.
He recommended.
It's called Mind Over Mood. It's one of the more popular ones. It's a little bit of a generalized for depression and anxiety.
Okay.
And it's very helpful, actually.
Cool. Yeah, that's interesting. I've seen that book before. I'll have to put it on my list. Listening, I will put the links to anything that Samantha's talking about, books and videos, in the comments underneath when I post it on the Facebook. Very cool. So did you, like, were you, when you started researching it and you got into it and you did you have that sort of aha moment of like, oh, this is me?
Yeah, it was that Tony Atwood video for sure. Mm-hmm. That was like, because, you know, you read and it sort of makes sense and you're like, yeah, that like kind of makes sense. But then when you're listening to someone actually lay it out in a way that someone would be experiencing it, like, yeah, on a, like a case by case basis, then it's like, yes, I completely understand. This is 100% my life.
Yeah. Yeah, I had that same experience with, there's this book, I probably mention it every single episode because it's like the book for me, but it's called A Very Late Diagnosis of Asperger Syndrome by Philip Wiley. And mm-hmm. I remember, like, this is, I don't know, a year and a half ago when I started really getting into this stuff and I was Googling and different books came up, and that one, for whatever reason, I went, oh, this is interesting. Like this, he was like 53 when he got his diagnosis. And I ordered the book and I read it in like a couple days, and it was just like every single page was, I was just going, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. This is me. This is me. This is me. This is me. Like every single page, I just read the whole book and went, oh my God. And it was like, all of a sudden, all the things that I had been dealing with my whole life, like depression and anxiety and thinking like, am I bipolar? Am I this? Am I that? I've got this social anxiety. I got this sensory stuff. I've got all these other, and it was like, they were all separate in my brain. They were like, you know, 8 or 10 separate things that I was dealing with my whole life and trying to like make sense of them all. And just thinking so many times, I just thought, I guess I'm just fucking crazy. Like I literally thought, I think I'm a crazy person. Like, I don't know what to do with all this. And then I read this book and then I started, and he was breaking down how, like, the depression, the anxiety, like, all this stuff, like, it all fits underneath that Asperger's or autism umbrella. And I just all of a sudden went, oh, like, everything makes sense now. And like you said earlier, yeah, it gave me, like, a really powerful opportunity to start the process of, like, healing and accepting myself, because I've spent my whole life beating the shit out of myself for not being as able to do stuff that everyone else just looks at me and goes, why can't you get your shit together? Why are you so irresponsible? Why are you this? Why are you that? Like, you know, why are you always so forgetful? Why are you, you know? And it's like, all of a sudden I went, okay, like I can try to stop beating the crap out of myself and try to accept what's going on and why it is what it is, and then start actually looking at systems and processes that I can put in place in my life to improve my functioning while,
yeah, like adapting around your limitations while still sort of respecting them, like not trying to suppress them, but yeah, just figuring out ways kind of like around them that you can still, you know, function in life. That's I think that's a difficult one for a lot of people with autism.
Yeah. Are there any things like that you've put in place in your own life that have worked for you, or that have failed, or that you've learned from along these lines?
I don't know. I never remember the things that fail, but for me, one of the big things is making like very distinct like areas for particular activities throughout like my home, even. Like, okay, I cannot have overlapping spaces. Like, my bedroom is my bedroom. That is where you sleep. Nothing else. Like, there's not, like, you don't have your computer or TV or anything else in there, or yeah, it's just like, it can just get so overwhelming. So like isolating little areas. And then also, it was funny because actually when I was reading about traits in autism, it says that like schedules and routines are so important. Yeah. And I was like, well, that's not really me. But yeah, then as soon as I started doing it, I started feeling better. So okay, I was like, oh, okay, well, I just need to stick to a routine. I need to have a schedule. So
yeah,
I've got a very, very, like, standard schedule for a basic day now, and it helps a ton.
Yeah. Do you have, like issues with executive functioning, like keeping track of schedules and times and appointments and remembering stuff, or...
I'm actually pretty good with it. Like,
yeah,
I do write a lot of things down. I have to have everything written down, and I do keep it in the calendar. And if it's not in the calendar, usually it's gone. Like, yeah, there's no chance I'm going to remember it.
Yeah.
I can be forgetful if I if I need to go pick up something from like post office or something, if I don't like keep the little like door tag with me, I will not go get it. I had to stick it to the dash of my vehicle yesterday, yeah. So I would remember.
Oh my god, that's like, yeah. I'm just laughing because I'm the same. It's like if I don't keep something in front of my eyes, it no longer exists. And it's like, if somebody moves something, like if I have it sitting out on my desk or sitting out on the counter and like somebody moves it, it's like, it just, it's gone from my world. And yeah. Same thing, if I don't put it in the calendar and then, or even like my calendar, if I put my calendar in my backpack and I forget to take it back out and look at it, like this happened to me last week, I missed two appointments because I had to, usually my calendar I leave open on my desk. So when I get up every day, it's the first thing I look at. And then I can go, oh, what am I doing today? But I had it in my backpack and I didn't open it. And I did an entire day and missed two appointments, like one with my dentist and one with my coach, because they just didn't exist. And it's just funny how it's like, I don't know. I feel like, I mean, everybody forgets stuff, but I feel like this is a major problem.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because my calendar's open beside me right here.
Nice.
Yeah.
So when you like got to this point, when you saw this video, you went, okay, like things are clicking in place and making sense for me. What was the process like for you for then having conversations around that with family, with friends, with coworkers, et cetera? Like sort of, yeah. How did that go for you?
Pretty smoothly. Like I'd be talking to my parents about it and I was like, because I actually have a terrible memory, and I'd like talk to my parents and I'd try to get them to sort of tell me sort of what my childhood was like what I was like as a kid, and I was telling them what I was going through. And actually it was really, really sweet because my mom was like, my sister also has, she's neurodiverse, she's ADHD, and she's also doing really well now that we both are addressing these problems. But my mom was saying that she felt bad. She was like, I really missed the mark with you guys, because I thought, well, kids are all just different. I thought you guys were just different. And I was like, well, we are. That's what it is. But it was great that my parents were never, like, they were never trying really hard to make us quote unquote normal, right? Yeah. So I was like, that's pretty standard mom. She just thought we were special little beings. She would have us no other way. So yeah, I mean, my parents were really like, yeah, that makes sense. And they didn't really, doesn't really affect them past that. And then my sister, of course, she was like, well, obviously I thought you had that.
Yeah.
And work was like, just supportive. They're like, let us know if you need anything, which I don't really need much from them.
Yeah.
So it was like, yeah, cool. But it was very smooth for me. I've heard some people have had some very rough transitions, a lot of difficulty getting the help they need, and I've been very fortunate to be able to progress through things without really meeting a lot of resistance. So
yeah.
It's been good for me.
Oh, that's awesome to hear. That's awesome to hear. Have you had any changes in your behavior as far as like things you might have suppressed before that you're now letting out, like stimming or anything like that, or just sort of being more on top of noticing when you're getting overwhelmed and being able to create boundaries for yourself and things like that?
Kind of. Look, my stims are very under the radar. I feel like for a lot of women, our stims are like, we do things that are not really noticeable. Like I'll just sort of like play with my fingers sort of like underneath the desk or something, or I'll like chew on my tongue, like things you never, you would never notice. Yeah. So I haven't really had to change that because it stayed the same.
Yeah.
I think the big changes for me just came from my own use of time when I'm not at work or out in public, and recognizing that if I overschedule myself or if I like book too many things in a week, I'm going to burn out.
Yeah.
Recognizing that is not a possibility, but an inevitability.
Yeah.
Was like massive for me, just to know I cannot schedule 10 things in a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Will not for me.
Huh. Yeah, that sounds familiar too. It's like, it's like, just do one thing today. Just do one thing.
Yeah.
Pick one thing. Do it. Get it done. Now, what about like socially, like with your friends? Have you? How's that experience been? Or do they know? Are you out with them? Or
Again, I feel like I'm not really much to struggle with these things because I've been very fortunate. I grew up in a small town. All of my friends I have known since kindergarten.
Yeah.
Except for one of my friends, she joined our little group in like high school. So all of my friends, they are very aware of like just who I am as a person. They're aware of my behaviors, my communication patterns. Yeah. And I'm not saying they love it all the time. We've had our miscommunications and we've had our arguments over the past like 25 years or however long we've known each other.
Yeah.
But it's really, it's not as exhausting to hang out with people when you know you don't have to be like explaining yourself, or you don't have to be like, oh, I feel bad for you. You can't tell on my face that I feel bad or that I'm sympathizing with you, but it's happening. And you don't have to explain that to people who have known you for so long. So yeah, in terms of friends, like I've been good, except for in the world of like maybe making new friends, it's next to impossible to make new friendships when you're just exhausted all the time. And you're like, I could go socialize, but I really don't want to because you're just so tired.
Yeah. That's cool. I have a lot of friends that I've known for a long time too, and it's been pretty cool this last year with some of my close buddies, just like being really supportive and you know, people I've known 20 plus years or even longer, and yeah, it's very cool. It's funny, when I was first looking into all this, and I did the AQ test online, like the Asperger's quotient test. I don't know if you've heard of that or not, but from, and like I scored, I think 45 out of 50. And then I was like, well, I wonder what this really means. So I decided to do a control group, and I got three of my best buddies that I've known for 20 years each to do the test. And they all scored like 19, 20, 21. And then that was one of the things that made me go, okay, there's something here, you know, like, it's not.
This... Actually, I think you talked about that on one of your podcasts. And I think right after that, I actually sent the AQ test to my friends.
Oh, did you?
Like, what are you? I don't remember their scores, but it was similar. Like everyone was pretty low. But what I did notice is like, so my sister who has ADHD, she scored quite a bit higher than anybody else. So I think there's definitely overlap in some, other neurodiversity is with autism in that regard. So.
Yeah. Do you feel like with you, like, do you have some ADHD traits as well?
No. I feel like a lot of people are like, maybe, no, I'm very task oriented. It's like, once I do get around to doing something, I have to do it. Like, I can sit down, I can work on it for a allocated amount of time, and it's not usually a problem. I mean, my phone can be distracting, so I just like chuck that. I just put it somewhere else. Yeah. Or it does get distracting. But if there isn't like an obvious distraction like that, then I'm usually good.
Oh, that's cool. That's very cool. How do you find the interplay with you and your sister, with like one of you having ASD and one having ADHD? Those must be some fun conversations.
It's hard to say. Me and my sister, we're very close, even in terms of, I think, of a lot of like siblings relatively, but we're just so used to each other that I don't know that our, like, I couldn't comparatively say that we have like these interesting interactions, because to me that's just how we interact. So maybe, I'm sure my mom could probably comment on that from our childhood better than I could comment on it now.
Yeah. That's cool. So what's like, how do you view yourself now? Like, as you're 2 years into this discovery process, How do you like, I guess the greater question, I'm always interested in how people kind of view themselves as autistic in the world and how they view autism, you know, like in general, like, you know, as far as acceptance goes or just functioning or all these other things.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things for me is learning that it is learning about the community more, almost more than it's learning about myself. Like once because I know myself very well, like yeah. I can navigate my own issues very easily, but now learning community and learning like what people with autism are needing and out of society and what sort of supports are missing there.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting to see what we could potentially get done as more, I don't, not everybody likes the term, but as like higher functioning
yeah.
people with autism, what could be done to help people who are struggling to like self-advocate and yeah. all of that. So I think for myself, learning everything that I have learned so far is just going a route of some solid self-advocacy and
yeah.
just kind of letting people within your own life know that right now autism is, with people with autism, it's more about acceptance
yeah.
than it is like awareness. Like it's not, you know, it's not cancer, it's not a disease.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a different, it's just different brain processes. It's just
yeah.
different way of thinking. So getting more people to accept that, I think, is really important. And I think that's been a big part of like my conversation with people
yeah.
about autism moving forward.
Yeah.
It's not about seeking out, you know, pity or help or anything like that. It's just like, just understanding and just opening conversation to people.
Yeah. You just touched on a few things there that I definitely want to talk about. Like there's something like that's one that they're all the stuff you just said is the, you know, really why I wanted to start doing this podcast is just to, you know, have these conversations. And I think, I mean, yeah, I know there's a lot of, what do you call it? Infighting in the autism community about functioning labels,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
and all this. And to me, I mean, I think we need to be able to discuss the differences. We need to be able to have conversations around how is it that somebody could be live their whole life and be diagnosed at like 70 and live their whole life not knowing. And whereas someone else who has more severe autism would be diagnosed as a toddler, you know, or as a baby. It's like we have to be able to have these conversations. And I think there's something, like you said, that is an important role that people who are higher functioning can play is advocating and communicating. And you know, I had an experience, I think I've mentioned it before, but it's important, and I'll mention it again because I think it's important. Like I had an experience at my job. There's a person that works there who works in the back in the kitchen. She's a dishwasher. She's young. I don't know what her official diagnosis is, but I am almost certain she's autistic in a way more obvious way than I am.
Right.
And I remember one day, like, and she's difficult to work with.
Yeah.
Because it's she doesn't understand everything. She's kind of like slow to pick up things, and you have to be really clear. And she's, you know, and she, it is what it is. It's, but she's a good person and she tries her best. And I remember one day overhearing some of the people at work talking about her and saying, and just, oh, she's so annoying and blah, blah, you know. And it just really hurt my soul because I just kind of went in my heart, I'm thinking, well, she's me and I'm her. But I, for whatever reason, am like higher functioning, which just means I can hide my autism better, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's one thing that I think the general public isn't really aware of. It's not... There's an amazing quote. I think I might have written it down. No, I didn't. didn't. It was something like, oh, it's, it'll come to me. Less severe autism doesn't mean that it's less severe to me. It just means you aren't perceiving it as severely.
Yes.
So that in the general public, like they're seeing people who like stim visibly, like they'll shake their hands or they'll rock.
Yeah.
I'm doing that, but I'm doing it like with my hands under a desk, or yeah. I'm doing like I'm chewing yeah. on my tongue,
yeah.
and it's doing the same thing. It's coming from the same place, yeah. but because it's being hidden, or it's more socially acceptable behavior,
yeah.
then I'm seen as somebody who's just functioning better, and yeah. it's not always the case.
Yeah. And I think that's like when you're seen as somebody who's functioning better or not so obviously stimming or whatever it might be, then I think that can make it more difficult for people to understand and accept. Like, if you do get to a point where you're getting close to, like, meltdown or shutdown, or you need, like, lots of recovery time from socializing or other things, because people can look at that and just go, well, you're not that bad. Why do you, you know what I mean? Like, it's, I find that I've had that conversation with people close to me, like, in my life where, you know, I've been told I'm just, like, making excuses because I don't want to do something or whatever else. And it's like, I think there's a sort of a stigma there when we are hidden in plain sight, that then when we express needs, they're not understood. Whereas if we were more obviously autistic, then people would probably, I think, make more space for that. At least right. that's something I think that's unique to the sort of, I keep doing air quotes when I say it because I don't want anyone to, you know what I mean? Like, if I say yeah. higher functioning, someone's going to be like, don't use this term, you know?
Yeah,
but I don't know. Yeah. It's just, yeah. It's like in that moment when they were talking about that girl at work, and I just thought, and I stopped them and I said, hey guys, like, you know, she's autistic. She needs our support. Like she's not annoying. She's trying her best. And yes, it's difficult. And I go back there and talk to her sometimes, and I find her difficult to deal with. But yeah. I'm like looking at that going like, so, but I have to have, you know, patience like everyone else does. And it's just, yeah, I don't know. It's tricky because everybody, I feel like so many people talk the talk about acceptance and all this stuff. But then when it comes down to just like day-to-day life, it's hard to deal with certain people sometimes, you know? Oh,
absolutely. I feel even in like there's a few of like Facebook groups or advocacy groups that I'm a part of, and every once in a while I'll get a message from somebody, like a private message, and it's exhausting because it's like you want to be open and you want to be accepting, but some people are just, they're difficult to deal with.
Yeah.
And even I think even within autism community, learning how to talk to people that are of a different functioning level as you, like, I think that's really valuable because,
yeah.
like, I think the functioning labels aren't, I'm not a huge fan of them. I use them because a lot of people use them, and it's
yeah.
just, I don't know how else to phrase it.
Yeah.
I'm sure somebody will tell me after this.
Yeah, but, yeah, we'll both hear about it afterwards.
Yeah, of course. But just trying yourself to not wrap your mind around like, well, I'm high functioning and they're low functioning,
yeah.
so how I don't we can't communicate. It's like
yeah.
learning a way around that, I think right now for me is really important,
yeah.
because it's something I'm struggling with right
yeah.
now, that's for sure.
Yeah. I've found too, like in doing this podcast, it's been amazing. Like, I've gotten emails and messages on Facebook from people from all over, like Canada, the States, Europe, Australia. Last week, somebody from Kenya. All these people messaging me just saying, hey, like, we love what you're doing. I listen to this and it's like, I relate. You're talking about my life. It's so cool. And then I get these messages and I message back and I say, hey, thanks so much. I appreciate your words. Like, if you would ever want to have a conversation with me for the podcast, I would love that. And like 95% of them are like, no way. Like, I am not talking. I'm not being recorded. I'm not comfortable with that. Like, so these are a lot of the times people that, you know, either don't have that comfort level or don't, or maybe have more difficulties in speaking or whatever. And they're saying, we love what you're doing. Keep doing it. You're speaking for us. And that's great in a sense of like showing, like getting it out, like what it feels like for us. But like, I'm not comfortable doing that. And so I feel like that's sort of solidifying in me, like that this is kind of important work in being that I am somebody who is autistic, but I am comfortable speaking in front of people, as I think you are. And I feel like, well, if I'm comfortable speaking in front of people, then, you know, it's important to do that and in a way do that for all the people that aren't comfortable doing that, you know,
absolutely. Yeah. And self-advocacy it's so, so huge in the community right now. Like there are even like in younger members, like teenagers, everybody is like super annoyed because the general public they love speaking to the parents of autistic children, but they won't talk to the actual autistic children. They won't talk to them about what they need or what they're looking for. And it's exhausting because it's like, we get it. Like you're living with somebody with autism, but you're not living with that perspective yourself. So it can be very frustrating. And it's one of the big issues right now for advocacy groups.
Yeah. And I think there's so much potential for so much good to come from those conversations of like all these people that are adults now that grew up autistic, diagnosed or not. I mean, can provide so much insight and information to these parents of like, hey, I was your kid. I know what, I mean, everyone's an individual, but there are certain commonalities that we can share and like, and hopefully be able to help. You know, I wish that conversation was happening more, like, you know.
I don't know if you've noticed or if you kind of felt this growing up, but it's almost like autism stops existing after 18.
Yeah.
Like the conversation around it doesn't typically include adults unless you are talking to autistic adults. So
yeah,
the supports aren't really there. I mean, I think it has a little bit to do with the fact that, you know, you go to school and the kids that did get those extra supports, they had, like, you know, they were in your class, but they would go elsewhere.
Yeah.
And that was your extent of your knowledge of somebody with autism or with functioning needs. So it's bizarre that adults with autism are kind of forgotten about. It's almost like it goes away when you're an adult, but it definitely.
Yeah, like on your 18th birthday, it just disappears or something.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm neurotypical, just like that.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, let's just, you know, if we put the kids through all this therapy when they're kids, then when they're 18, they'll just graduate.
Yeah.
They'll graduate from being autistic. It's like, well, no, it doesn't work like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's something. It's funny, like, not funny. Like a big part of what I wanted to start getting involved in doing this podcast is like focusing on adults, focusing on specifically undiagnosed, self-diagnosed and late diagnosed adults. Like this is because there's not much happening in that space. And it's like, it's interesting. Like I'll have conversations with people, neurotypical people, and immediately they just go right to talking about kids.
Absolutely.
And I'm just like, oh, okay. Like this is just everybody just thinks, like you said, it's that's the focus. And I mean, obviously we need a lot of focus there because those kids need help, but
oh, yeah.
They're, you know, it's just, yeah. I was doing a thing last year where I was trying to do a little like fundraiser for Autism Acceptance Month in April. And like people I was talking to and immediately they were like, oh yeah, so we can put the money to like this thing or that thing, like this kids thing or this school thing. And I was like, oh, I'm actually trying to like raise some money to support autistic adults. And it was like their faces just went blank, like as if like I was talking about something that didn't exist, you know. It's just it's interesting. Yeah. Do you see yourself as an advocate?
Maybe in like a smaller sense. In the future I would like to start being more involved and being part of some bigger conversations, but as of right now, I think it's really important. Like, if somebody comes up, like if something comes up in conversation with somebody and they're like misinformed, or they're like talking about some things that aren't necessarily true about people with autism, like I'm more than happy to step in and be like, hey, just so you know, like, and try not to be like, you know, rude, like, you know, well, actually, I'm trying to just like respectfully, respectfully, like bring the conversation around and be like, just like, you know, respectfully educating people as I go. So in that sense, I'd like to say I am advocating.
Yeah.
On a fairly small scale.
Yeah.
Right now.
For sure. That's funny you said that. I have that, like, one of my biggest fears is, like, whenever I'm talking about something, I always am like, am I coming across like an asshole right now? Like a know-it-all? Or I just, or like, you know, when you, like, info dump on somebody and then I'm like, did I just come across like a total prick?
Yeah, yeah. I have a... One of the things that my sister's boyfriend pointed out, that I talk a lot about dogs.
Do you?
And I was like, I know a lot about dogs, and I'm really bad for info dumping.
Yeah.
Anything to do with dogs and dog breeds, and it's just, and now I'm like very, very aware of it. It's like I need to not overload people with information.
Yeah. I'm gonna go there. I'm gonna ask. What are your favorite dog breeds?
I'm a really big fan of the herding breeds right now. I'm really a big fan of Belgian Shepherds and German Shepherds, and big fan. I've been on a bit of the tirade against the Labradoodle movement.
Yes, thank you. Somebody needs to take a stand.
Yeah, it's out of control.
It's my mom was a dog breeder.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so I grew up with, like, on weekends, like, the whole family getting dragged to dog shows, and my grandparents, they had, my mom and my grandparents had, like, Russian wolfhounds and whippets and the whole thing, so that's why I asked. It was kind of funny. I'm like, oh, you're a dog, you're the dog thing. Yeah, I was like, you know, have you seen the movie Best in Show?
No, actually.
Oh, no, it's pretty funny if you're into, like, the dog show scene or anything, but anyway, yeah. Is there anything else that you want to chat about that we haven't got to yet, or anything that was on your mind? We're getting kind of down to the last few minutes of...
No, I mean, you know, we covered quite a lot of it.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Well, I want to thank you for your time here. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. I was really happy to have you on as an individual, and also like as a woman, to hear that sort of different perspective, because it's I think that's something that it's really important to talk about, is you know, the fact that things can appear different in boys and in girls, and a lot of girls, I mean, a lot of autistic kids in general get missed, but from what I've been reading, like, more girls even get missed because of just the way that, you know, the everything just kind of presents a little differently, but
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Hopefully that somebody will watch that Tony Atwood video and be like, I know somebody just like that.
Yeah.
And help somebody out. That'd yeah. be great.
I'm going to find that on YouTube, and I'm going to put that in the comments.
I'll send you the link.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Thank you. Yeah. I love Tony Atwood. He's amazing, but I don't think I've seen that one yet. So that'd be really cool to check out. But, yeah, thanks so much. Any final words?
No, thank you so much for having me on. It was great.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah, we'll keep in touch. And yeah, if you ever want to do this again, we can do it.
Will do.
All right. Thank you.
See you.
Bye. Hey everyone, it's Ryan again. Thanks for tuning in. That was my conversation with Samantha Dirk. I want to say shout out to Samantha. Thanks so much for taking the time. I very much enjoyed our conversation and look forward to speaking with you again someday. I appreciate your time again. And yeah, everyone tuning in, thanks so much. Please follow us on whatever socials you're on. Instagram at The Life Autistic. Twitter at Life Autistic Pod, I think, and then Facebook, The Life Autistic Podcast. So find us on there. Please follow, listen, share, all that good stuff. And if you want to reach out to us, you can contact me directly at thelifeautisticpodcast@gmail.com. So thelifeautisticpodcast@gmail.com. If you're interested in having a conversation with me for the show, that would be awesome. Or just if you have any questions or comments or anything you'd like us to talk about, I'll be doing a Q&A coming up soon. So I'll be answering a bunch of questions. And I've got a few more interviews lined up over the next week or two, a few more conversations. So I'm working on trying to get this going on a more regular basis. I'd like to get a new one up every week. My schedule is just sort of changing a little right now, so I'm kind of juggling a few things. But as I settle into a more solid schedule in the next few weeks, I'm going to be planning to just do this once a week and get a new episode up. So as always, I appreciate you listening. I appreciate your comments. I appreciate your feedback, and I appreciate you sharing the podcast. And also whatever podcast app you're using, I would definitely appreciate it if you go on there and give us a rating, you know, 5 stars, whatever it is, leave some comments. Just that helps get the word out. And if you are able and willing and would like to support this podcast, you can do so as well. We'll be setting up a Patreon soon, or if you want to support it in any way, you can always contact us at thelifeautisticpodcast@gmail.com and find out how to do so. Currently, we don't do any advertising. I just do this podcast out of my own time and out of my own pocket, and I'm happy to do it that way. I love what we're doing. I love getting to have these conversations and talking to all these wonderful people. And the feedback I'm getting from all of you all over the world, the comments and Facebook messages and emails I'm getting, it's amazing, and I really appreciate that. That makes it all worthwhile. But you know, that being said, if you do want to support the podcast financially, I won't say no, because you know, life is real. So you can always reach out if that's something that speaks to you. But in the meantime, just stay tuned. We'll have more coming up in the next week or two. I've got a couple more conversations lined up for the next week, so I'll keep posting those. And once again, shout out to Samantha. Thank you so much again for taking the time to do this. Very much appreciated. And all of the books and videos and things that she mentioned, I will be posting in the comments on the Facebook page when I post this podcast up. So just look at the Facebook page, look in the comments. We'll put that Tony Atwood video and anything else in there. So, all right. Thanks again, everybody. Talk to you soon. And yeah, reach out and take care. Peace, love, autism. Hey guys, I just realized I had a couple little recordings I made in the car last month when I had my first phone meeting with the psychotherapist for my assessment and diagnosis. So yeah, I'm just going to tack those on the end here. You can check them out, listen to those. And yeah, I'm going to do another episode soon where I go more in depth about that conversation. But I just thought I'd tack them on to the end here. There's just you know, 5 or 6 minutes each. So you can check those out if you want. If not, just hit stop now, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks. Bye. Hey, all. What's going on? It's me. It's Ryan. You are on the Life Autistic Podcast with Ryan Summers. I'm in the car right now, so please excuse if there's any noise. I got the windows up, but it's kind of windy out there, so there is some noise happening. First of all, I hope you're all doing well. Yeah, trying to get back in this habit of putting this podcast out. I've got another one recorded and in the bag that I just have to upload, so that'll be coming out soon. But today's an important day, and I wanted to share it with you. So this might just be kind of a shorter one, just that I'm recording while I'm driving. But I am on my way to my first of three assessment and diagnostic appointments. I guess that's what you call it. The assessment, they call it. So back in like December, January, I made an appointment. Somebody told me about the ADHD and ASD center in Guelph. So I reached out to them, had a really awesome phone call with Micheline, who is there. She's the administrator, I guess, who is just amazing. Set up an appointment, and then I had something come up, and I had to cancel that appointment. I forget exactly why. And they're booked pretty far out, so we rescheduled for sometime in late March, and then we all know what happened there. So that appointment quickly, with the whole shutdown and everything, was canceled. So anyway, I've just gotten back in touch with them a month or two ago to start rescheduling. So their center was founded by a person who has ADHD and I believe possibly Asperger's as well. And all of the counselors and doctors and nutritionists and therapists and everyone else that work there are all neurodiverse. So this is very appealing for obvious reasons to be going to a center where people are not only educated and trained in neurodiversity, but are themselves neurodiverse. So the people you're talking to are going to be people who, you know, are on the spectrum or have ADHD or other neurodiverse brains. So that's pretty cool. So anyway, today I have this appointment set up. It's the first of three. So I guess their assessment process or whatever they call it, I think they call it that, is a three-stage thing. So you have three different appointments. I believe the cost is somewhere around $500 to $600. But you pay for each appointment individually, like $100 to $200 for each one. So I know that's out of the reach of a lot of people, but I'm lucky or I'm grateful that at the moment I am able to afford that. So I'm going for it because as so many of you know, it can be really difficult to navigate this path through your family doctor. I made one attempt to do that. It didn't go anywhere. I made another attempt with a psychologist that went somewhere, but not quite where I thought it should. And then I was hipped to this Asperger's and ADHD center, and I thought, well, here we go. These are the people I want to talk to because this is what they do. So, and again, that's going back to, you know, my family doctor, like no criticism there. It's like, you're a family doctor. You're not necessarily trained specifically in how to deal with an adult on the spectrum. Or same thing with the psychologist I went to see. Again, I'm sure she's a great psychologist, but not specifically trained in this particular issue. And there are differences and there are specific things that are unique to undiagnosed adults that have gone through their life without a diagnosis. Obviously, masking is a big part of that, and just especially in this age group of, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, and up. Simon Cohen, the autism expert in the UK, he calls that the lost generation because this generation. Went through school before this diagnosis was something anyone was even looking at. So anyway, so here we go. I've got my first appointment today. I was going to just be doing it from home on the computer, like on a Zoom call or Skype or something like that. But I had one of my teeth broke the night before last. So I have an emergency dentist appointment I'm driving to right now. And it's kind of funny. I've got my assessment appointment is on the phone, like a Zoom call, at 2:45. But then my dentist could only get me in at 5 o'clock today. And that's an hour from my house. So what I'm doing now, it's an hour before my assessment call, but I'm driving to my dentist's so that I can do this call from the parking lot at the dentist's office. And then as soon as the call is done, I can go inside and get my tooth fixed. I broke a molar and it's actually starting to really hurt a lot. It didn't really hurt too much for the first, 12 or 18 hours. And then it slowly started hurting more and more. And in the last, today it's really not feeling good. Part of the inside of the tooth is exposed. But anyway, that's that. This is what I'm doing. I'm on my way. I'm going to have this appointment today. I really wish there was a way I could record it, although obviously I wouldn't do that without their permission. But if I was at home and I was doing the appointment on my laptop, I could maybe record it with my phone, with their permission, of course, although I doubt they would grant that. But, obviously doing it on the phone in my car, I have no way to record it. But I'm going to take some notes during, and I'm going to come back and let you all know how it went afterwards. So I guess I will call this part one, and I will stop recording in a moment, and then I will come back after the appointment and add part two. And then we can, follow it up there, and I'll let you all know how it went. So I hope you're all doing well. And I guess we'll pause here for some kind of commercial break. And then we'll go from there. All right. Talk to you soon. Love you. Well, I guess you'll hear from me again in a few seconds. For me, it'll be a couple hours. But for you, it'll just be a couple seconds. Okay. Bye. All right, I'm back. My phone's about to die, so I'm going to make this really quick. But I'm on my way back home. I had my phone meeting with one of the doctors from the ADHD and ADASD Center in Guelph. So the whole process is this... Sorry, I'm in the car if that's loud. Sorry. The whole process is this, like... three-part thing. So this was like the initial assessment. It's scheduled for 80 minutes. We got through the 80 minutes. We had a really great conversation. He asked me a lot of really cool questions, connected a lot of dots for me that, a couple of them I hadn't really thought of before. That was really cool. Went in depth on a few things. He introduced me to a couple concepts that I wasn't really familiar with. So that was really cool. But as I'm sure all of you listening are well aware now, I have a tendency to ramble on and on and on. And so this 80-minute phone call I had, it was supposed to be a video chat, but since I was in the city, it wasn't with Wi-Fi and the video was spotty, so we ended up just doing it as a phone call, which actually I think I preferred. It was kind of better because I wasn't having to like focus on looking at his face. I could just... kind of talk, and I'm a pacer when I talk too, so I could like actually just kind of walk and talk. So I tend to ramble on. Not really someone that comes to a point quickly when I'm speaking. And so the 80 minutes, we got to like 70 minutes, and he said, "Well, hey, you know what?" Or we got to like an hour, and he said, "We're not even really halfway through my questions yet, so we can basically try to do..." Sorry, just some people were waving at me as I drove by. That's life in the country. I'm on some dirt road. Anyway, he said, "So we're at an hour. We got 20 more minutes. We're not even halfway through the questions. So what do you want to do? You can do two things. We can try to just like do like speedy answers and plow through the rest of the questions really quickly, or we can book another session to finish this." And I just kind of thought about it and said, "Well, I don't really want to rush this process. I've been waiting a year to do this. I've been waiting my whole life to do this. I don't want to rush this process. So let's..." Sorry, just making a turn here. "Let's yeah, just do like one more question or whatever, and then we'll jump into it another day. So I've got another appointment booked with him for 2 weeks from now. Then I have my follow-up, which is the actual assessment. This is like a pre-assessment. Then I have the actual assessment with another doctor there. That's scheduled for a month from now. So anyway, the process is happening. It's underway. It's really exciting for me. I had this amazing conversation today with him. It's like he's got a list of 10 questions or 10 traits or something to go through. And we discussed some of them. And it's really cool for me to get to talk to someone who understands this stuff and go through it. And it's really interesting, too, because some of the traits he what about this? And I'm like, oh, my God, yes, absolutely. Like, that's a huge factor in my life. Other ones, I'm like, man, not so much. But this is it. This is the spectrum. This is how it works. It's like that, though, like a mixing board in a music studio with the different faders that go up and down. And it's like, it's just a spectrum of all these different traits. Some are pushed higher than others. Some are lower. Some move based on what you're going through, your stress, whatever. Just like it would with anybody. Your functionality changes with your stress, with your food, with your fitness. Anyway, here I go. I'm rambling again. My phone's down to 2%. I'm going to get off this phone. I'm almost home. Then I can plug it back in again and I can finish putting this podcast together. I'm really excited. I feel really good. I did that meeting and then I went right into my dental appointment. I have a cracked molar and got that looked at and fixed a little bit. So anyway, it's a good day. I feel really good about that meeting. I was definitely nervous. When I'm nervous, I do tend to ramble a bit. But I was just upfront about that and said, hey, I'm going to ramble because I'm nervous. Or when I caught myself rambling. And anyway, he was really cool. Again, connected a lot of dots for me. We talked about a lot of interesting stuff. I was outside kind of pacing and walking like I do when I did it. So I didn't really take notes, and I couldn't have really taken notes anyway just because of the nature of the conversation. I really wanted to focus on what we were talking about. So I don't know. I'm going to do the next one. I've got it scheduled. I'm you know, barring any further dental emergency, I can do it from home on Wi-Fi. Maybe I'll get to take some notes then. I'd like to sort of write down the 10 different traits that we were talking about and then maybe write a blog post about those. And go into some of the stuff that we had discussed. So there it is. Shit, my phone's at 1%. I gotta go. I gotta save this before I lose it. I'll talk to you all soon. Thanks for listening. This is The Life Autistic with Ryan Summers.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.